Near Minneapolis, Minnesota, there's the largest indoor shopping mall in America. It's called Mall of America. It has several layers. I think it's at least one basement floor and a three above. It's a very big place, lots of things there, and they have what they call Legoland. And that's where they have stuff that's built out of Legos by the company to show all the fantastic things that you can make. And it's a big area, you know, about the size of this room. And if you've ever walked barefoot or stocking feet across the floor and you've stepped on a Lego building block, you know where you've been. Or maybe you stepped on some other toy or object. Almost everybody has an experience of stepping on something and you know something is wrong. So you stop your forward motion because you don't want it to get worse. There's something that is laying where it shouldn't be. So as a child, my brothers and I were admonished to always pick up our toys so that someone didn't trip over them. This was especially true at Grandma's house. Grandma kept a couple of boxes of toys, fun toys, Tinker toys and another one with Lincoln Logs. And whenever we visited, we built lots of things with those Tinker toys and Lego and the Lincoln Logs. There weren't any Legos at that time, but everything had to be put away, be picked up and put away before we finished. I'd like you to turn to Matthew 16:23, and we're going to get there in a minute. Was it 5 years ago was my aunt's funeral over in Oklahoma. So I had an opportunity with my cousins to reminisce about visiting our common grandpa and grandma's home. And my cousin's words were, quote, "Whenever grandma stamped her foot, you had best do whatever you were supposed to do for fear of what would come next," end quote. And we all knew it. We just knew it. You see, we never really knew what was going to come next, and we didn't want to find out. So we complied with whatever grandpa and grandma wanted, especially about picking up our toys scattered around the room. Well, what were grandpa and grandma worried about? Well, if we take a look at the comfortkeepers.com on their website, published in 2016, have some interesting statistics about what happens when people fall. About a third of the senior population over 65 fall each year. But many incidents go unreported by seniors and unrecognized by others, whether family members or caregivers. The estimate is probably a bit low, more than a third perhaps. About 9,500 older Americans die each year associated with falls. It's one of the leading causes of death from injury among people who are over 65. And the risk for falling increases proportionally with years. At age 80, over half of seniors fall annually. Oh, what a joy to look forward to, right? Be careful. Now, 87% of all fractures in the elderly are due to falls. Two-thirds of those who fall will do this again within 6 months. When an older person falls, his or her hospital stays are almost twice as long as those of other patients for any other reason. Among people aged 65 to 69, one out of every 200 falls results in a hip fracture. One out of 10 for every of those who are 85 and older. One-fourth of seniors who fracture a hip from a fall, one-fourth will die within 6 months of the injury. But the falls do not necessarily result in injury. That 47% of non-injured seniors who fall can't get up without assistance. I know myself, I don't even get on the ground voluntarily without a plan on how to get back up. And I don't think I'm alone. Time spent immobile, not being able to move, affects their outcomes. Within 30 to 60 minutes of lying there due to falling, dehydration occurs, pressure soars, hypothermia, pneumonia, and other complications. So it's important to avoid falls. Well, my title for today is Identifying Stumbling Blocks, because what causes people to fall? Some kind of stumbling blocks. So I want to cover 4 points, and they're going to hit us in 4 different ways. The stumbling blocks that we as individuals put in front of each other. Stumbling blocks we put in front of ourselves. Another point is stumbling blocks that others put in front of us individually. Don't you really hate it when that happens? So the second point is stumbling blocks that others put in front of us individually. And then the third point is stumbling blocks that we put in front of others, whether it's on purpose or inadvertently. And fourth is stumbling blocks that we as a congregation might put in front of others. So the first point, stumbling blocks that we put in front of ourselves. For many years, I've had the opportunity as a high school teacher to counsel high school students who aren't doing as well as they should in school. They're not performing. They aren't turning in their assignments on time. Perhaps some of them not even at all. Perhaps they're getting low test scores because they don't do the preparation, they don't do the reading or the daily work, so they don't get a good grade. Perhaps there are problems in the student's home, and the student brings those problems to school. And when those problems build up, the student often lashes out with a behavior problem. So I privately ask the student, what do they think they can do to better have to have a better result? And the answers are vary pretty widely. But generally speaking, my response to the students is usually the same. I advise almost all students, they need to become their own best friend. They need to stop putting a stumbling block in front of themselves, because it's what they are doing themselves that is creating a problem. Well, the challenge then is recognizing the stumbling blocks that are in front of us individually. In Matthew 16:23, Jesus Christ was quick to point out a stumbling block. Matthew 16:23, but he turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me, for you are not setting your mind on God's interest, but on man." You see, Satan was influencing Peter inappropriately. Well, everything Satan does is inappropriate. But Christ said, focus your mind, setting your mind on God's interest. So sometimes we don't recognize a stumbling block in front of us. Perhaps we're enticed by something different or distracted by something else. In Proverbs 7:22, we have the example of a young man in Proverbs 7:22 who was inappropriately enticed by a young lady. And the verse in Proverbs 7:22 says the young man is foolish because he's unaware of bad things that will happen to him. In Proverbs 7:22, immediately he went after her as an ox to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks. In other words, didn't realize there was going to be a nasty consequence. Well, I grew up on a farm, and many times we load steers onto a livestock trailer and send them off to market. The steers didn't know where they were going, but I knew they weren't coming back. Just as the ox is unaware that it's about to be slaughtered, so many people are unaware that the consequences to sin will wind up badly for them. Commonly, people think that the bad consequences happen to somebody else. But it's only after it's too late that many people realize they should have chosen a different path. One of my brothers was a tree troubleshooter and problem solver for the biggest 3M plant in the world with 2,000 to 3,000 employees. When something went wrong, it was often because of the negligence of a worker. And they asked him, what should they do? And his common advice, as he was explaining to me, he said, it seems to me you should have been more careful. Well, that's pretty universal advice. I've kind of adopted that. If there's a problem, most of us should have been more careful. Well, we need to be aware of the consequences of our own behavior because there's a price to be paid for our decisions. The studies show an example of this. That there's a strong correlation between gum disease and Alzheimer's dementia. Well, my late aunt that I'd mentioned earlier was a dental hygienist. And my cousins were, as we were chatting after the funeral, they said every evening their mom would sing to them, it's time for brushy, brushy, brushy. So she was, of course, she worked at a dentist's office. She was very consistent about that to get them. And they remembered this. That was stuck with them for life and, of course, with their kids accordingly. It's the little decisions in life that we don't often connect with the consequences that often come much later. So what kind of stumbling blocks do we put in front of ourselves? The list is long and varied. won't fit on a page, and we don't have enough time today because we all find different ways or stumbling blocks. But what's a problem for one person is easy for somebody else to overcome. They don't see what the problem is. It's always then easier to point out somebody else's weakness than it is to realistically discover and work on our own weaknesses. And I'll give an example. Some people are drawn to chocolate. That's their weakness. It's as addictive as cocaine. But chocolate is fun. It's good. It's a little reward. Some people seemingly can't help but criticizing others. After all, aren't we supposed to be honest with others? So we let them have it with full blast. Reminded of the meme, the fellow said to his wife, he said, "I've been married for 30 years, and everything you say and do is always correcting me." And she said, "We've been married 31 years. Okay, I mean, it seems like there's no end to certain relationships. So some people take or steal stuff from other people. Others vandalize other people's stuff. They don't take it, with good regard to other people's property. A number of years ago, there was seniors had arranged a senior prank week. Well, I went through this every year. One week, the hallway to my room was filled with balloons. No matter what you did and how you did it, to get down that hallway was filled with balloons, and it would be very interesting to try to get through that one. But that was fairly harmless, that one. There was another one where they did graffiti in the parking lot, and they would take chalk on the very, and people, teachers are all assigned parking places. Seniors or those with a parking permit all had their own places, and they would be decorated with whatever message they wanted to send to a person. Unfortunately, this same mindset also decorated right in front of the main entrance to the school building, and they used paint. And I knew something was going to happen that day, and the superintendent called a meeting. And I heard it over the intercom, all seniors report to the cafeteria now. Well, I heard about what happened later. The superintendent, who normally doesn't come to the school, but, you know, the principal would be running the show, but superintendent says, and I heard this from the students later when they came back to class, they said, "Superintendent didn't mind senior pranks and chalk, but when they painted in front of the front door of the school, that was bad. Especially because their spelling was incorrect. So it didn't reflect well in the school, and the superintendent wouldn't have discovered it, but she was bringing a $2 million donor to the building to refurbish the auditorium, and would met with bad spelling on the front, painted on the front by the front door." So you can imagine it was pretty exciting. They told me it was the loudest they've ever heard anybody in the cafeteria. It got very exciting that day. So people do things that make it life difficult for other people. Some people spend money on movies made in Hollywood that display sinful activities. Some people claim that they're strong and they can resist temptation, although they put themselves in bad situations, and we all know that's not going to turn out well. Well, we're approaching Passover season. It's just 3 weeks out. So we have to continually examine ourselves to make sure that we aren't becoming our own worst enemy. And it's important then that we don't place a stumbling block in front of ourselves. 2 Corinthians 13:5. In 2 Corinthians 13:5, we're admonished to take a look at ourselves. 2 Corinthians 13:5, examine yourselves as to whether you are in the faith. Test yourselves. Ooh. We always like to test other people, perhaps, but what about testing ourselves? Are we really in the faith? Do we do what we say we are? The verse continues, "Do you not know yourselves that Jesus Christ is in you, unless indeed you are disqualified?" In other words, it's pretty important to look at ourselves and to make sure that we're doing the deeds and not just talking the talk. Well, one way to overcome weaknesses, or you might say sin, is to have a plan and then carry out the plan. In 1957, although that was a long time ago, let's see, 43 and 24, 67 years ago, the Yale University graduates, all of the graduates underwent a study, and they all said they had a plan or goals. However, all of them, it was universal, they all said it, but only 3% of them had written down those goals, their plans for life. Young 22-year-old graduates, they had ready to go off into the world. So the study, 25 years later, they compared the only thing that you could compare from student to student, because they all signed up for it, sure, is they compared their assets. How much were they worth? At the end of 25 years, that means they'd all be about 47 years old, and they compared the monetary value, because that's the only fixed thing that they could compare from student to student. They couldn't compare happiness, joy, contentment. You know, that was hard to measure, but dollars they could measure. And when I'm reviewing this for students in school, I say, well, take a guess. The 3% of the students that wrote down their goals, guess what percent of the total assets they had after 25 years? And of course, the flip is that the 97% that didn't write down their goals, how much did they have? And the shocking part of this is the 3% that wrote down their goals had 97% of the total assets. And the 97% that didn't write down their goals, they only had the 3% of the assets. So then the question that I give to my students that I was counseling, which group do you want to be in? You want to be in the 3% that has a modicum of success? Or do you want to be the 97% that are struggling? So the idea here is that we need a plan. We need a plan to remove the obstacles that we place in front of ourselves. Now, I've had a couple of falls this last year. They've had a negative impact on my life. When you fall and your head is the first thing that hits the ground, that's not a good thing. So now I'm really a lot more careful when I walk on the stepping stones near my house. On one side, I've got it all leveled, so it's all flat dirt, and the stepping stones are flat level. I haven't done it to the other side yet. But I want to, that's physical obstacles. But what about the behavioral or obstacles in our life? Now, one plan I use, step I use to root out sin in life, first of all, is to ask God, first of all, replace any wrong thought, any fleeting thought, replace it with something good. So I ask for that, replace a thought of sin, replace it with something good, something that's righteous. And the second thing I do is I ask God for strength to be helpful, helpful to myself and helpful to others. So that's my plan. It's a two-part, replace the bad with the good and ask for strength to be helpful. So point one is about stumbling blocks that we put in front of ourselves. We must identify the items that we need to overcome, thank you, and we have to have a plan to overcome them. So point two is stumbling blocks that others put in front of us individually. I was traveling on the freeway in a car in the fast lane. I'm driving in the slow lane, and a car in the fast lane comes zipping on by, crosses over two lanes in traffic, and then takes an immediately an exit. Had to pass all those cars going at a high rate of speed and barely missing the cars in the other lanes, and then to make a sudden exit. Highly unsafe, could have resulted in a lot of damage and multiple lives lost. And I'm pretty sure all of us have seen that kind of crazy behavior before, maybe commonly on the freeway. So I try to avoid it, the freeway as frequently. Well, we can't control the bad decisions of other people, but we can be prepared by being the best we can ourselves. Now, in this case, I wasn't tailgating or exceeding the speed limit. I wasn't driving tired or impaired. So I was prepared for this sudden happening. We all have to be prepared lest someone else catches us unawares. Now, some people put stumbling blocks in front of us deliberately, and others put stumbling blocks in front of us without realizing what they're doing. But I have an old quote that a deacon in Minneapolis told me about 30 years ago. He clued me in and he said, "Dumb or crooked, the results are the same." Whoa, and I don't know where he got the quote from, but it was piercing enough that we have to be careful. The person may not have bad intent, but the outcome is going to be the same as if they had bad intent, so we have to be careful. I think it's safe to say that most of us have had, many if not most of us have had challenges regarding the keeping of the Sabbath. And sometimes the obstacle that others put in front of us is deliberate. And we can all tell stories in that regard. I recall an important meeting that somebody else scheduled in the community, but they scheduled it for a Saturday in order to exclude me from attending the meeting because they knew full well I wasn't going to be there. Well, I'm aware of that, but and I could see that it was deliberate for them to try to sway the community decision. Years ago, when my school was building a new building, they added a $25 million addition, my classroom was going to be moved to a new location. And unfortunately then, the school decided to move my classroom on a Saturday. Now, they moved a number of my personal furniture pieces, bookcases, shelving, and cabinets. They decided they didn't want to move them to the new building, so they threw them away. And it was on a Saturday. I couldn't say, I wasn't there to tell them, hey, hey, that's my personal stuff. You can't throw away my stuff. So what was I supposed to do when I found out? Because administrators threw my stuff away. Well, it didn't match the facility that was moving in, but didn't have an opportunity for me to take it personally, to take it away. So the trashing of my stuff wasn't necessarily personal, and I don't think they did it deliberately, but the consequences made life difficult for a while. But there are people that do things deliberately to hurt other people. And if we turn to Proverbs 7, starting in verse 14, in Proverbs 7, 14, God has a way of dealing with others who wish to do us harm. In Proverbs 7, 4, starting in verse 14, behold, the wicked brings forth iniquity, meaning sin. Yes, he conceives trouble and brings forth falsehood. Ever hear of a lying person who causes trouble for you? Verse 15, he made a pit and dug it out and has fallen in the ditch which he made. Ouch. So they wanted to do bad to someone else and then fell into the pit or the ditch that he dug out for someone else. Verse 16, his trouble shall return on his own head and his violent dealing shall come down on his own crown, meaning on the top of his own head. In other words, people are going to do bad stuff, but guess what? They're going to earn a bad result, a bad consequence. King David offered what we call an imprecatory prayer in Psalm 35, and he was asking that his enemies get what they deserve. And it's really, there are about five or more imprecatory prayers in the Psalms. And he says, plead my cause, O Lord, with those who strike with me. Fight against those who fight against me. Take hold of the shield and buckler and stand for my help and draw out the spear and stop those who pursue me. Say to my soul, I am your salvation. Let those be put to shame and brought to dishonor. He said, basically, let them suffer what they wish to inflict upon me. It continues on. Those who seek after my life, let those be turned back and brought to confusion. Who plot my hurt, let them be like chaff before the wind. What's chaff before the wind? Blows away. Let the angel of the Lord chase them. Let their way be dark and slippery. Oh, I've been on a dark and slippery way. That means you're in danger of falling, bad things. And let the angel of the Lord pursue them, for without cause they have hidden their net for me in a pit. They're trying to set a trap. Anybody ever set a trap for you? If you've got siblings, which I did, then you grow up to be careful, right? Because siblings learn some of these things the hard way. But without cause they have hidden their net for me in a pit, which they have dug without cause for my life. Let destruction come upon him unexpectedly, and let his net that he has hidden catch himself into that very destruction. Let him fall. In other words, let him suffer the consequences of their own design. And that's what King David was asking. Well, I have had people ask me what to do when someone deliberately does something to hurt them. And of course, I recommend that they take steps to secure their own safety to prevent that problem from happening again. But revenge isn't necessary because God will take care of that. We can read further in Proverbs 26, 27. And really that earlier psalm speaks to the same issue. But Proverbs 26, 27, whoever digs a pit will fall in it, and he who rolls a stone will have it roll back on him. So if someone sets up a hazard or something for someone else, they're the ones that are going to have to suffer. So the people that cause trouble will reap bad rewards. You may have heard of the expression, make stupid decisions, win stupid prizes. And that's what a lot of people do. Now, when I was in high school, from junior high through high school, there was a bully who shall remain nameless, not because I want him to remain nameless, but I don't need a lawsuit either. And he was a constant bully and a pain. Well, 25 years after graduation, I went back to my hometown. I went down to the courthouse to get a legal document for a piece of property I was buying. And I poked my head into the courtroom. It was just a curiosity. Courtroom was in session. And there I saw my high school bully getting the comeuppance from a judge who was sending him to jail and giving him a lecture on how to be a nice boy. 25 years later, now I don't know how many times he has been locked up, but the judge was giving him the what for. So point two is stumbling blocks that others put in front of us, others will put in front of us individually. We have to remember God will take care of it in Micah 6:8. In Micah 6:8, what's our job? Do justly, do the right thing, love mercy, let the little things go, and know that God will take care of the bigger things, and then walk humbly with our God. We don't have to be arrogant about it. Did I do a cat call into the courtroom saying, ha, 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 so you got what you deserve, and then run? Felt like it, but I had to purge that thought. I've only hung on to it for a while now. But you see, he got it back, and I don't know how many places he got it back. But others will put stumbling blocks in front of us. How we handle it reveals our character. Third point, stumbling blocks that we put in front of others. Ooh, that's a terrible thought, isn't it? Hopefully, we don't put a stumbling block in front of others, but sometimes we inadvertently cause a problem for others. You really want to insult somebody. I've heard this one. I'm trying to remember where I heard it. When somebody wanted to insult somebody else, without using profane or vulgar or foul language, they say, I hope you step on a Lego. Well, that's a very uncomfortable thought. But we don't want to put stumbling blocks in front of other people. But sometimes we inadvertently cause problems for others. In Romans 14, verse 13, in Romans 14, verse 13, therefore let us not judge, which means condemn, one another anymore, but rather determine this, not to put an obstacle or stumbling block in a brother's way. The verse in here in Romans 14:13 tells us to be careful, to watch out for one another, and we should avoid doing something that would cause then a brother in Christ to fall. We read earlier about physical falls. We have the same thing with regard to spiritual falling. We can read in Leviticus 19, this is reinforced, in Leviticus 19, verse 14. In Leviticus 19:14, you shall not curse a deaf man. Well, why shouldn't you curse a deaf man? He can't hear you. Everybody else can. Okay, it's your attitude. It says, nor place a stumbling block before the blind. Would that be cruel? To put a stumbling block before somebody who can't see it, doesn't know that it's there? But you shall revere your God, for I am the Lord. So you don't make life difficult for other people. Many years ago, my uncle, who's an airline pilot for a major airline, got up overnight, went to the bathroom and stubbed his toe on the corner of the fireplace. And apparently he was rather urgent to go to the bathroom because he stubbed his toe and broke it. And we all know that stubbing the toe is not a happy thought. And so he put a, so he was trying to explain to crew schedulers why he couldn't make a flight that day, because he stubbed his own toe. But he had recently, of course, moved the furniture around in his own house so that his own himself became a stumbling block and caused that problem for himself. But God has called us to make good decisions, to learn to become more godlike. In 1 Corinthians 8, verse 9. 1 Corinthians 8, verse 9. But take care of this liberty of yours. What liberty? The liberty to make good choices. The liberty of yours does not somehow become a stumbling block to the weak. Just because you can do it doesn't mean you should do it in front of others, because they may be an area where they are weak in. So just because you can do it doesn't mean you should do it. So even the manner in which we present the truth can become a stumbling block to those who are weak in the faith. In 1 Corinthians 1, verse 23, and you think, how can the truth be a stumbling block? 1 Corinthians 1:23, but we preach Christ crucified, but to Jews it's a stumbling block, and to Gentiles it's foolishness. They aren't believing it. They're not buying it. They say it's foolish. And I get some of that on the online social media management, where some of them saying, you're misleading everybody. Well, so what if Friday crucifixion and Sunday resurrection doesn't exactly comport? You're missing the point. The point is that there was a crucifixion. So they're trying to justify that. And so they see the videos that we produce as a stumbling block. Or I get insults online, and that's where you see Gentiles call it foolishness. Had one that put in a picture of a van, and on the side of it said religion, and the van was going over a cliff. Okay, and so that was their way of responding to our videos. So they saw it as foolishness. So about 13% of the population in those Scandinavian and Eastern European countries believe in God. Now, that's less than 1 out of 7 people actually admit to having a belief in God. And so you might imagine preaching the true gospel is met with some hostility. So it requires care in knowing what to present and how to present it. But we don't want the truth to become a stumbling block to those who are spiritual babies and need milk. In Matthew 5, verse 12, we'll take a look at this milk-meat combination. In Hebrews 5, 12. For though by this time you ought to be teachers, you need someone to teach you again the first principles of the oracles of God. And you have come to need milk and not solid food. So the writer of Hebrews is admonishing them that says, you ought to be mature in the faith. By now you should be able to be teaching the truth. Instead, you just need the basics, the milk, the little things. And not milk. You need milk and not solid food. And of course, we all know babies start on milk, and it takes time for them to learn to eat solid food. And I've heard several things. Some say 6 months, and others say things before they can introduce solid food. The next verse, Hebrews 5:13, for everyone who partakes only of milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness, for he's a babe. Babies can't eat steak. We don't chop up a steak and give to them. We don't say, here's an enchilada. I'll cut it into smaller pieces. No, they're babies. They get milk. 1 Corinthians 3:2. The Apostle Paul is writing to the church in Corinth. And he is giving us some advice here by telling them, I fed you with milk and not with solid food, for until now you were not able to receive it, and even now you are still not able. He's been giving them milk, and it's been very slow to be able to participate or to be able to take stronger truth. Reminds me of my baby brother. I say baby brother, he's 4 years younger than I am. And And we all wondered why he couldn't talk. Was there something wrong with him? And in those days, the baby bottles were not plastic like they are today. They were glass bottles. For the young people, that was a long time ago. Okay, so he was in his crib. And one day we heard this smash, crash. He had taken that bottle and he was, and he had flung it out of the crib, hit the wall, smashed the bottle. And of course, everyone ran to see what the problem was. What's wrong, Danny? What's wrong? And he stood up in his crib. Now, mind you, this is a kid who is not talking. He says, I want a drink of water. Well, it turns out all of his needs were met. He had no reason to say anything earlier. He finally had a reason to say something. He was at a bottle. He was getting soft food or milk, but all of his needs were met. When he was wet, he was had a new diaper. He was always clean and always fed. So he didn't have any problems until the bottle got empty that day and he had had exasperation. Okay. So stumbling blocks that we put in front of others, we have to be careful even with the truth, just as we do, whether we do it on our social media for Northwest Arkansas or social media elsewhere in the world. But we shouldn't be afraid to offer the truth, whether it's personally talking to someone, but we can speak the truth in a gentle and a wise way that'll be better received. The fourth point is stumbling blocks that we as a congregation put in front of others. Yes, I said that out loud. Stumbling blocks that we as a congregation put in front of others. Now, we have a church culture that we're generally comfortable with. And we're so used to doing what we do, we have a regularity about doing what we do. And we look forward to our orderly process, our orderly worship services. And I'm not sure that we recognize that bits and pieces of our church culture might seem a little strange or unusual to other people. I know when I talk to Protestants or Protestant ministers, well, how long does the minister speak or how long do you speak? And the answer is very widely. If I told them 45 minutes, they would, you know, open their eyes up quite a bit. The Bible tells us to identify obstacles that are in front of people that might prevent them from joining us at church. In Isaiah 57, verse 14. In Isaiah 57, verse 14. And it will be said, build up, prepare the way, remove every obstacle out of the way of my people. So we have to be conscious of that, to remove potential obstacles so we build up other people. And each one, it's up to each one of us to identify obstacles to make it possible to fellowship with people with who are responding to God's calling. Now, in Revelation 2:14, bear in mind, not everything is tolerable, nor should we tolerate everything. In Revelation 2:14, but I have a few things against you because you have there some who hold the teaching of Balaam, who keep the teaching of Balak, to put a stumbling block before the sons of Israel, to eat things sacrificed to idols and commit acts of immorality. You don't have to tolerate stuff that is blatantly unchristian. And so, but we still have to do what's pure and what's honorable. The Apostle Paul wrote to the church in Philippi in Philippians 4:8, in Philippians 4:8, he gave those instructions, what to do and how to do them. In Philippians 4:8, finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. That sounds pretty positive, where you're doing and living up to the highest standard that you can. Leaders are called to serve God and have a special responsibility. In Malachi 2:7, we read, for the lips of a priest shall preserve knowledge, And men should seek instruction from his mouth, for he's the messenger of the Lord of hosts. But guess what, folks? We're all called to be priests in the God's coming kingdom. We're all trained, being in training to be leaders. And accordingly, we all have those special responsibilities. And Malachi 2:8, the very next verse, Malachi 2:8, he's chastising then the priest. But as for you, you've turned aside from the way. You've caused many to stumble by the instruction. You've corrupted the covenant of Levi. So Jesus Christ spoke strongly about putting obstacles or blocks in front of other people. In Matthew 23, verse 13. In Matthew 23, 13, very strong words. But woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. That sounds like name calling, because they were. Because you shut off the kingdom of heaven from people, you do not enter in yourselves, nor do you allow those who are entering in to go in. In other words, making it difficult, preventing people from understanding the truth. He says it a little different way, but similarly in Luke 11, verse 52. In Luke 11, 52, woe to you lawyers, for you've taken away the key of knowledge. You yourselves did not enter, and you hindered those that were entering. And it reminds me of Aesop's fables. You guys may have read those as a kid, about the farmer had an ox that pulled the plow all day long. And the dog happily went across with him in the field. And that's the way it was when I grew up too, thousands of years later. That when you go farming and the dog likes to go with you. Well, the farmer at the end of the day and the done plowing, he put the ox in the stall, fed the ox some hay, and he forgot about the dog. And so what did the dog do? It jumped on the hay in the manger and barked and prevented the ox from eating the hay. With the idea, well, if I can't have any, you can't either. And we have those. This is the Pharisees, the lawyers that Christ is talking about. They were preventing other people from learning the truth. Well, we don't want to hinder those who God is drawing into his church. In 1 John 2, verse 10, 1 John 2:10, the one who loves his brother abides in the light, meaning truth, and there's no cause for stumbling in him. So let's make sure to love our brethren that we don't want to have any reason or cause for stumbling for those who are coming to responding to the call of God. Well, the short answer to the question on how not to hinder others, and it's a real short answer, because you know there's a short answer and a long answer for almost everything. And in Proverbs 15, verses 1 and 2, there's a short answer on how to not hinder others. Well, you can start by being gentle. Be gentle. Let's look in Proverbs 15, starting in verse 1. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. And the tongue of the wise uses knowledge rightly, but the mouth of fools pours forth foolishness. So what should we do? Well, it tells us here, have a soft answer. Basically, be gentle. Because if you don't, a harsh answer is going to stir up anger. Have a wise tongue. Don't be considered foolish. Apostle Paul gave his congregation of Corinth a choice. In 1 Corinthians 4:21, we read the choice that he gave to this. Now, we read about the sins of the people in Corinth and the congregation there. And so Paul writes and says in 1 Corinthians 4:21, what do you want? Shall I come to you with a rod or in love and a spirit of gentleness? Now, if the Apostle Paul came to us and said, what do you want? A rod or love and gentleness? Which would you pick? He's giving them a choice. We can do this the hard way, or we can do it a much more gentle and easy way. So we can always resort to giving somebody a piece of our mind. We can really set the record straight. Or instead, we can follow Paul's example, exude love and a spirit of gentleness as we assist to guide them into the truth. So point four, stumbling blocks that we as a congregation put in front of others. We must each look inward to make sure that we are being the best person we can be And the result of that is that our congregation will be the best that it can be. We need to examine ourselves and strengthen our behavior as we draw nearer to Passover. So let's identify stumbling blocks that we put in front of ourselves. Let's get rid of those. What about stumbling blocks that others put in front of us individually? Let's learn to guide our, keep our eyes open and guide around them. Point three, stumbling blocks that we put in front of others. We certainly don't want to do it on purpose, but we must then carefully be very watchful and careful that we don't do it accidentally. And number four, stumbling blocks that we as a congregation put in front of others. We have to be careful there to make sure we're doing all we can do to follow Christ's example and follow Apostle Paul's admonitions. So let's all lift up our hearts and our voices to God as we seek to be better persons in how we follow God's law, both individually and collectively as a congregation.